From the Northern News Network, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. The rising cost of prescription drugs is the fastest area of growth in expenditures in medicine today. Montana's Commissioner of Securities and Insurance and State Auditor Troy Downing talks about how recent legislation to be enacted soon will hopefully help reduce those costs. Plus, the hot housing market, and as an Air Force veteran who served two combat tours in Afghanistan, Troy shares with us his thoughts on the U.S. involvement there and a hope that we can continue to come together as Americans as we continue our fight against terrorism. That ahead on this podcast from the live Voices of Montana program. Commissioner Troy Downing, how you doing, Troy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thanks for taking the time for being here. Appreciate that. We haven't caught up with your office in a little while. I think it's been over 6 weeks or so, and obviously busy. Why don't you give us an overview, an update?
You know, it's really interesting because, we kind of do this baptism by fire. We get when we elect our statewides, we get sworn in the same day the legislature does, so we have to hit the ground running with our legislative agenda as we're putting our teams together and going through everything else. It's a pretty interesting time. But so we had a very active legislative session, and I have a lot of people that, you know, will come up to me and say, oh, you must have a lot of free time now, you know, now that that's over. And I equate it to elk hunting. It's kind of like you spot an animal, you track it, you stay downwind, you finally get to the point where you can squeeze off a shot. And then you high five and you're smiling and you look at the animal and you're like taking pictures. And then all of a sudden you go, okay, now the work begins. Mm-hmm. So a big thing that we're doing right now is, you know, we had a very successful legislative session. You know, we are bringing in, reining in, pharmacy benefit managers to try to bring down the costs of prescription, drugs and also, healthcare, insurance, medical insurance premiums. That's been a big lift for us. It's a Registration and Transparency Act, and so we're in the process of implementing that and doing the rulemaking to make sure that we're, you know, effectively regulating pharmacy benefit managers and make sure that they're doing the right thing. We had a big win on permanently expanding telemedicine in Montana, and so that's also been a big deal, especially for, you know, folks with mobility or transportation issues, those in rural Montana. It's a meaningful addition that we've put through, and we're just going through and making sure that we're implementing all these bills that we got through the legislature, making sure that the rules are set up correctly, that we're, you know, getting the most bang for our buck and making sure that we're doing good by Montana. So that's a huge part of what's going on in this office. And another thing I want to talk about is, one of my hats that I wear here is the Commissioner of Securities. And so in securities, you know, we regulate on the state level and we prosecute, you know, bad actors in, you know, financial fraud and securities fraud. And one of the things that is a big priority of this agency is really going after fraud against senior citizens, elder abuse and exploitation. So one of the things that we did a few months ago is we reconvened the Eastern Montana Elder Abuse Council and started that again. It's a multi-agency effort and relies also on community on, first of all, identifying, it's a criminal justice agency, so identifying and going after bad actors who are abusing elders, and that can be, you know, emotional abuse, it can be physical abuse, and in our case, we go after those in the financial abuse if they're doing financial fraud on elders. And so we reconvene that, and it's been a very successful program, and we're starting to spread that across the state. So we're in the process of putting together a north and south, central, and a western Montana council to do the same thing. And what this does is it creates some infrastructure for, first of all, like I said, it's a criminal justice agency, so going after, you know, people who are abusing elders. And we have the second highest, oldest population in the country, so we're, you know, we have a lot of senior citizens in the state, so it's a meaningful endeavor here. But really the goal is prevention. And so we're really trying to educate and make sure people understand how to protect themselves, how to protect their parents, how to protect their grandparents, how to spot fraudsters who are trying to defraud. And since it is a multi-agency endeavor, you know, our office here in the auditor's office, you know, we'll go after all the financial fraud, and then it'll get referred to the Department of Justice or the appropriate agency if it's, you know, physical or, you know, other types of abuse against elders. So that's a big process that we got going on in the office right now. So it's to put it briefly, we've got a lot going on, but it's good work, and we've got an awesome team here, and we're definitely advancing the ball.
Yeah, appreciate that. I kind of want to go into, we've got a headline break, just 2 minutes here upcoming, about the elder abuse councils. I like reconvening those. I know that we do a monthly program called Fraud Watch Friday, and every time you hear a story about an elder who has been abused, and it's not just only fraud, sometimes it's physical abuse as well, it's a devastating story, and so prevention is key in that. A couple of things I want to backtrack on too is the pharmacy benefit managers enacting those policies. So we're back with more here in just a bit. Montana's auditor, state auditor, also the commissioner of securities and insurance, and also, as I mentioned too, an Afghanistan veteran. I think two tours over there. Thank you for your service, Troy. Want to come back and get your thoughts too on this commemoration of the 20th anniversary of the attacks on 9/11. So let's grab some headlines first. Here's Brian Bennett. Thank you again, Commissioner, for being on the program here. The PBMs, we've talked about that on the air here too, legislation regarding that. How's that going to be effective in cutting down the cost of prescription drugs? Because the prescription drugs, the price of those can be real debilitating for families at times.
Well, it's the highest growth in expense in patient treatment right now. If you talk to Blue Cross Blue Shield, it's almost a third of the money that they're spending on patient care is going to pharmaceuticals, is going to drugs. I mean, it's the highest growth area, and so, you know, we only have, in my office, we only have jurisdiction over the PBM part of the prescription drug supply chain. So you go from the manufacturer all the way to the pharmacy, and that middle piece are these pharmacy benefit managers. And the reason we have jurisdiction is in the United States, you know, they've decided that insurance is not interstate commerce, so it's not part of the interstate commerce clause of, what the federal government has authority over. So clearly it's state-based regulation on insurance. And last year there was a Supreme Court decision that PBMs are the business of insurance. And so they fell squarely into our jurisdictional authority. And so we're asserting that. And really what we're trying to do here is, first of all, find out what we don't know. Right now we have no idea how many PBMs are operating in the state of Montana. So the bill that we passed is it's a licensure and registration act. So they have to register with our office so we know who's doing business here. And then the second part is it's a transparency bill. So all of the kickbacks, the rebates, the refunds, all the remuneration that they receive for distributing and doing these deals, bringing drugs to these plans into these pharmacies, that all has to be disclosed. So just shining the light and understanding how much money's in the system and where it's coming from, I think that invokes the ability for market forces to start coming into effect. So if you're doing a contract with a PBM and you're a health plan and you understand how much money's in the system, you have a better foot up on negotiating better contracts to make it more in line with the actual value brought there. And I don't want to say that PBMs aren't bringing value. They are. We just want to make sure that everything is being above board and fair. And then the final thing is one of the issues that we hear from independent pharmacies is that in the past, PBMs have not abided by our Montana statute for maximum allowable costs in prescription drugs. And so that's the independent pharmacies claim that that's been an issue and they've had no way of dealing with that. And so now, since we have jurisdictional authority over the PBMs, we have the ability to compel them to follow our laws. And so those are existing laws. That's nothing that's new, but now we have the ability to compel them to follow. And, we can revoke their license if they don't. So we have some pretty good tools on making sure that everybody's following the rules. So ultimately what this does is it's transparency. So we understand, you know, where the money's coming from, where it's going to. And we're hoping that those market forces come into place now that we've, turned the lights on in the room. And worst case scenario is after this becomes effective on January 1st, and so we'll have a year of data going into the next legislative session. And worst case scenario is we know then what we didn't know now, and we can modify what we do to make sure that we're having the best effect on pushing drug prices down. And really our hope is that these are market forces once we have that transparency.
Troy, thank you for that. I want to come on back. I know after September 11th, you enlisted in the U.S. Air Force, and want to get your thoughts 20 years later. Troy Downing here on Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Let's get back to Troy Downing here, Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, Montana's state auditor. As I mentioned, too, twice served, deployed to Afghanistan in support of Operation Enduring Freedom and the global war on terrorism. So a combat veteran. And Troy, thank you for your service and thank you for being here. Before we move to Afghanistan and your thoughts on the withdrawal and the 20th commemoration, one thing I wanted to just close up out of your office is that I know that you guys are dealing with, as everybody is in Montana, the high cost of housing in the state, and there's been some movement in that regard.
Yeah, well, housing and homeowners insurance is obviously a big deal when I put on my Commissioner of Insurance hat here, and there's a couple of issues that we're looking at, and one is because of the high danger of wildfires in western Montana and of hailstorms in eastern Montana. We've seen, some pullback in insurance companies trying to, pull out of certain markets. And that's something that has us concerned. We're looking at that really closely. We have a task force going on right now trying to identify solutions of doing that, making sure that we have, markets available if insurers start coming out. But here's something a little more, of general interest that I think a lot of folks listening should think about if they haven't already. Is, it's not just the high cost of housing, but the high cost of construction. So your insurance policy for your home is likely based on replacement costs. And a lot of people will buy a house and they'll insure it for the price that they paid for it and not realize that, 10, 20, 30 years down the road, that may be inadequate. And so here's the problem is right now with the high cost of building materials, of wood, of plastics, because of the issues they had in Texas last year of just getting labor, the replacement costs are going through the roof. And some insurance companies will penalize you if you're not actually covered for the replacement cost of your home. So here's an example. If the replacement cost of your home is twice the amount of what you actually have on your insurance policy, and you have a claim, say it's not a complete loss, say you have to replace a roof, and that roof costs you $100,000, that insurance company may only pay $50,000 of that claim because you have not been adequately insured to cover the replacement cost of the entire home. So it's important that people understand that some policies have those provisions, and you should periodically check in with your insurance agent to make sure that you actually have coverage for the replacement cost, not the purchase price, the replacement cost, in case you have a loss that you need an insurance company to cover.
Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, that's the hat he's wearing now. And now let's put on that other hat, sir, and thank you again for your service. Your thoughts. I know that you served 8 years in combat search and rescue missions, and so you had to be real frustrated with what happened in terms of the withdrawal. But so comment on that, but also your thoughts as we are now 20 years post 2001.
Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing that up. And obviously, September 11th affected all of us. And it's interesting to me now in the 20-year anniversary, thinking that there's a lot of kids out there that don't remember what, most of us remember and where we were, what we were doing, what was happening. Being attacked in that way on our own shores was a wake-up call. And, just to start this off, one of the positives that came out of that is we came together as a nation like we hadn't before in my lifetime. We weren't Republicans and Democrats and men and women or, you know, whatever. We were just Americans. We all came together as Americans. And, that was, amazing to see. And, I think, 20 years later, we've lost touch with that commonality that we all saw there. But, when that first happened, like I said, it affected everybody. And how it affected me is, I walked into a recruiter's office like a lot of other folks did. And I'm sure a lot of the folks listening on the radio right now did, because, it was important to me to stand up for this amazing nation that's been so good to all of us and given us so much opportunity. And, when we were attacked on our own shores, it was important to me and to virtually every American to recognize and do what they could to, support this amazing nation. So, it's been interesting. I went into a combat search and rescue squadron in the Air Force and did a couple of tours to Afghanistan, which has obviously been a big thing in the news. And, Afghanistan has been an interesting place. I mean, there's a reason that Al-Qaeda was able to plan and organize, that bin Laden was able to do what he did from Afghanistan because of some unique properties of that country. It's where it is socioeconomically, just the whole idea of Pashtunwali, which is a cultural thing there, where you bring honor upon your house or your village or your country by protecting those seeking protection. And so the ability of, like bin Laden to hide in a country that sees that as a high honor, whether they agree with what he was trying to do or not, really makes it a hotbed. And so I've had over, the last 20 years, a lot of people asking me, how long we should have a presence in Afghanistan. And, they'll usually cite the fact that we haven't had a September 11th in 20 years and, or even in 10 years, a decade ago. And, my response has always been, the reason we haven't had another is because we're there. And, my response has always been, and, I didn't agree with Trump and I don't agree with Biden on this. I think we needed to maintain a presence there because, just because your house isn't on fire doesn't mean you want to take the fire department down from, down the street. Mm-hmm. I think that it was meaningful to have, eyes and ears on the ground there to make sure that we never saw anything like we saw leading up to September 11th. And making sure that we could react quickly if things started to get out of hand. I mean, I don't believe that we needed to have, large, military operations, but I think we needed to have a presence. And when I start hearing the rhetoric about these forever wars, and having a presence there for the long term, I just look at where else we've done that around the world and where it's been effective. We still have bases in Japan and England and Germany, and probably one of the most demonstrable effects of a, crazy, out of control place that has been reined in because we stayed the course is the Korean Peninsula. I mean, nowhere on the planet do you see such a stark difference between North and South. And I think staying the course was important. So I was not happy with the decision to pull out completely. And obviously, the method, even if you don't agree with me on that, the method that we used to pull out of Afghanistan, I thought was, bordering on criminal. I mean, mm-hmm. We just basically abandoned our allies. And people need to understand that there's a lot of folks, a lot of Afghans that, put their lives and their families at risk to, help us do the mission we were doing there. And I think turning our backs on there, is a huge problem for us in the future, if we ever need, to have that kind of cooperation from people of any country in the future, it kind of gives them pause to question our credibility there. I think that it was of paramount importance that we did the right thing for those there that were supporting us. And I've been, very concerned at how this has been handled by the current administration. I think it's just a black eye on America right now.
But, yeah.
We are America. We are the United States of America. We will prevail. We're a strong country, a strong and driven people. And I think that, we will prevail, but this will be a black eye. And I do believe that how this was handled will, in the history books, define the Biden presidency, just because it's such an issue.
Yeah, and it will have immediate, very serious, and very serious long-term ramifications too. So what do you think happens now in Afghanistan?
Before we get into that, one of the things that I just want to get out there is, you know, I've been very involved in veterans issues, and you know, involved with a foundation in Bozeman where we use fly fishing as therapy for wounded post 9/11 servicemen and women, and it's something that's close to my heart. And a lot of the calls that I get from, you know, folks that have come through our program or Gold Star families is, you know, was this worth it, or what, you know, they're trying to make sense mm-hmm. of the obvious backtracking that is happening and the sacrifices that they've made or that their families have made this. And I just want to make sure that everybody understands that service was meaningful, you know, that we did for 20 years make it impossible for the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or whoever, you know, whoever the group is at the time operating in Afghanistan to once again, you know, hurt us. And I think that is meaningful. And I just want to, you know, send out my thanks for everybody that did serve, because it was important. You stepped up to the plate to protect this amazing nation. That service was meaningful. You kept us safe. And for that, I'm, you know, forever grateful. And all the service members that have sacrificed in the support of this great nation there, you know, you're in my prayers, and I thank you for your service.
We want to second that here, too, as well. So forget what will happen next. Those emotions are going to be magnified coming up here in just a couple of days. How would you tell people to process those veterans?
Well, here's the thing: is what I want, as I started out in this talk, is you know, we need to fix problems and we need to heal, and I think we need to, you know, come together. There's so much division in this nation right now, and just understand, you know, these commonalities and common issues. And like I started, one of the things that that this did do when we were attacked is it brought us together as a nation. You know, those who were there for that, you know, try to remember what that was like. Of, you know, we were all Americans and we all came together, and it was an amazing thing to see. And just showing our resolve in the, you know, the face of adversity or the face of attack, and saying that you know, there's this commonality that binds us all together in this greatest nation that's ever existed. And try to, you know, remember what that is like, and see if we can start to, you know, mend some fences to, again, not focus on what divides us, but focus on what brings us together, and that is being Americans. And I'm just hoping that we can get a glimpse of that again as we start to reflect on this entire, you know, last 20 years going from the attacks to the withdrawal.
I'm going to give a big amen to that too, Troy. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your public service as well. You know, tell everybody hello there at the State Auditor's Office and Commissioner of Securities and Insurance as well. And you be well. Okay, Troy, thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's always a pleasure. And just a shout out for the agency. If people ever have questions or issues in insurance or securities, to, you know, just look for us at csimt.gov, and we're here to help.
Super. All right, Troy, take care, man.
All right, thank you.
Troy Downing.